I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Donald Trump campaigned on the message that he would undo many of President Obama's key accomplishments, the Affordable Care Act, TPP, and other trade deals, along with environmental, immigration, and economic policies and programs. Now that he is president-elect and Republicans control both branches of Congress, that could happen. President Obama held a press conference yesterday in advance of his overseas trip, and he detailed some of the successes of his administration.
We are indisputably in a stronger position today than we were when I came in 8 years ago. Jobs have been growing for 73 straight months. Incomes are rising. Poverty is falling. The uninsured rate is at the lowest level on record. Carbon emissions have come down without impinging on our growth. And so my instructions to my team are that we run through the tape. We make sure that we finish what we started, that we don't let up in these last couple of months, because my goal is on January 21st, America's in the strongest position possible, and hopefully there is an opportunity for the next president to build on that.
Our guest, Michael Days, has written a book detailing the nearly 8 years of the Obama administration titled Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. Days is the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. The paper won a Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting under his leadership, as well as other local and national awards. And Michael Days, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me, Maureen.
You're very welcome. Would you have written a different book if you knew that Donald Trump would be the next president?
I don't know whether I'd written a different book. Maybe it had a little more nuance about that. But I wrote the book because I felt like we needed to have a report card of what he had accomplished over 8 years. And the narrative had been that he hadn't gotten anything done. And I just wanted to test that narrative.
Why do you think that was the narrative? Especially when you go back and you look at his numerous accomplishments, it's interesting that that's the narrative that people have.
Well, I think when you think back to his first inauguration, then we know that that night the Republican leadership gathered and swore that they would make his life a living hell. Just to be honest about it, that they did not want that they wanted his 4 years to be a failure, and they were determined to make sure he didn't get another 4 years.
But he did.
But he did.
What does that tell you?
I think people trust him. I'm not so sure it's transferable to other Democrats, but I think they trust him. They feel like he was working hard, that he was on their behalf. And he was able in both times to put together a really strong coalition made up of most African-Americans, a good chunk of Latinos, a good chunk of Asians, and both times about 33-34% of the white Americans.
Are you, though, concerned that Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, when he's sworn in, and I mean, already you can see signs, he's clearly going after the Affordable Care Act and some other key issues as well, that he will be in a position to undo some of what President Obama has been able to do?
Well, sure. I think a lot of Americans are worried about that. But, you know, some of this stuff is not going to be easy to unbundle. You know, it's remarkable to me that in a 90-minute conversation with the president-elect decided that, well, maybe we don't want to get rid of some aspects of the Affordable Care Act. Maybe there are other things we should be thinking a little more about, because I would argue that Americans won't want to let go of certain key parts of the Affordable Care Act. Everyone is allowed to keep their children on their health plan until the child is 26.
Right.
Everyone, health insurers can no longer prevent you from having insurance because of a pre-existing condition. And the reality is, if you have a certain age, you have a pre-existing condition. So I think those two components are going to make it near impossible, because I could be proved to be a liar. But I think once people have something that they really need, it's hard to take it away from them. And then you've had the issue of about 22 million Americans have some form of the Affordable Care Act that subsidizes their health care. What are we going to do about that? Which is why I think the president-elect keeps talking about repeal and replace. But does it make sense to repeal it before you have something to replace it?
Well, you mentioned the fact that there's a fair amount of trust of the president. Of course, it's gone up and down, but he's in the 50s, as I understand it now, and there are very few people in this country who have that level of support and approval. Why do you think, though, he wasn't able to pull Hillary Clinton, if I can say that, across the finish line?
Well, God knows he tried.
He tried, and he put a lot of he was saying, either in overt or sort of covert terms, mm-hmm. that this would be the third term of an Obama presidency. Was that the wrong message, do you think?
You know, of course, this is all speculation, but I think that Americans want to hear what your vision is. The president-elect had already taken the position that he was going for scorched earth, and that was his strategy. And it seemed to me that Hillary Clinton used the same strategy, when her strategy, I would argue, should have been one of here's what I think America needs to be. Here's my vision of what America can be, as opposed to I'm terrible, he's terrible. You know, it was just back and forth. It's like, you know, it felt sometimes like a bunch of fifth graders sort of going at it.
I was wondering, too, whether Hillary Clinton and her team saw what happened to John Kerry when he got, quote unquote, swift voted and felt there was a need to respond to. I mean, Donald Trump was talking about locking mm-hmm. up Hillary Clinton, said a lot of things that were not true about her. You can be a critic of hers, but things were said about her that were not true at all.
Most of it wasn't true. You know, in hindsight, it's always 20/20, but, you know, particularly toward the end and then sort of that grenade that the FBI threw a couple of times, I think she was always sort of back on her heels. And then people didn't know, she hadn't spent enough time, I would argue, just telling people what she stands for and where she's taken the country. Now, you know, that'll never be able to be tested. But I think the other thing about Barack Obama, a lot of people felt uplifted by him. They felt inspired by him.
The hope and change.
The hope and change. Now, you know, there was probably a lot more hope in the beginning of his presidency than at the end. But I think people were moved by him.
I do want to talk about some of the accomplishments that you put in this book, but it always just rankles me when I hear that 40% of people who could vote didn't vote. And I'm not saying that would change the results of the election one way or the other, but just this opportunity to have your voice heard and perhaps make a change, or certainly have someone represent your ideas, that for some people, for a lot of people in this country, it doesn't compute, doesn't seem to matter much.
Or
maybe we make it too hard. I don't know.
Well, there seemed to have been some suppression, but I'm waiting to read more reports about all how that worked. You know, as an African-American of a certain age, I've lived through seeing a whole lot of people not be able to vote. Dogs, you know, unleashed on them. Mm-hmm. All kinds of weird tests that they couldn't pass. So, I mean, for a lot of reasons, I'm an American, and being an African-American, I feel like there's never going to be an election that I'm not going to vote for.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. So what do you see as President Obama's signature accomplishment, the main thing that he was able to accomplish in his years in office?
Well, the one I see as his senior accomplishment, we're going to see how it all plays out. But I think, you know, how many presidents, you have to go back to FDR and certainly Hillary Clinton as first lady, trying to get some kind of universal health care for the American people. I'd put my last dollar down. I think that 5, 10, you know, that's going to stay.
Now it'll survive.
It'll survive. Now, and what's going to be changed about it, I'm not quite sure. But we're an industrialized country. We're the only one that's still really struggling with the whole health piece. People have it, and while there's sticker shock, which probably has. I mean, if you don't have Obamacare, you still have seeing the sticker shock every year. So there's something to be said about how do we deal with the medical companies? How do we deal with the pharmaceuticals? How do we bring some of that cost down? I think that'll begin to make it more affordable for everybody. I'd also say slip two other things real quickly. I think the whole clean air piece, where he's got this pact, Paris pact with 189 other countries. I'm hoping that I think that will survive. Hopefully, it survives with us in part of it because we're one of the biggest polluters. I think that's huge, and I think that I think he's reset the table in terms of sentencing off of cocaine and crack cocaine. And because, you know, we went through that period when you were getting, you know, double the time in prison if you use crack cocaine as right. opposed to using cocaine. And those were primarily people of color, men of color, because it was cheaper to buy.
The kind of disparities we had when it came to things on judgment. How about just, I don't mean this symbolism in any way that diminishes the fact that this was the first black president that we had. We had a black family living in the White House. How significant do you think that is?
Well, you know, from an African-American perspective as a parent, you know, I think, and you know, from what my parents told me, we were always told that you could be anything in America. You could be president in America. And I'm not sure anybody really believed it until then, until it happened, you know, in 2008. So I think, you know, he mentioned, I think, at press conference that there hadn't been any scandals. I mean, that's an achievement all of itself for Americans. I just felt they really represented the country well. It was really a powerful symbol. You know, they come across as a really loving couple, and can you imagine raising two kids in that environment?
No. I mean, it's a beautiful prison, I think, as some people have described it.
Yeah, I think they, you know, they represent being parents, being Americans quite well, and beyond that, I mean, you know, Obama's really so strong on education. And, you know, he and his wife were sort of exhibit A and exhibit B on what education can do for you. You know, they come from modest backgrounds, both of them, went to good schools, Ivy League schools, and boy, did they make something of themselves.
Well, I'll say that. What about something that you think he could have done better on or had more progress on as an issue? An unfinished business, perhaps, is a... another way to put it.
Well, you know, race is always an unfinished business in our country. And I think in the first term, he was a little hesitant, a little gun shy. You know, there was that issue with Skip Gates, a very noted Harvard professor, just trying to get into his house, didn't have his key, and ended up getting arrested. And then, you know, Barack Obama, who had been one of his students, got admitted and said it was stupid the way he was treated. You know, and some of us just felt like, yeah, it was stupid.
But he had to have a beer summit.
It seemed kind of ridiculous. I think he just, but you know, although he's a great guy, he is a politician. I'm sure he felt like he had to walk a kind of a thin line there in terms of how he dealt with it. But I'm not so sure we need to be talking more about race, but we need to be doing something. Huh. And I think maybe this last election was some indication of that.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Michael Dades. He's editor of the Philadelphia Daily News, and he has a new book. It's called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. We're going to take that short break, open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tell us what you think Obama's greatest accomplishment is, and perhaps even some unfinished business. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Michael Dades about his new book, Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. And again, Michael Dades, editor of the Philadelphia Daily News. We were talking about race right before the break, feeling that perhaps I think the word you use in this book is reticent, the president's reticence to really jump into that issue. Do you think it was because, and I heard him say several times, I have to be the president of all people. Do you think his race sort of made it hard for him to talk about race?
Well, he is a president of all people, and I think we all should respect him for that. He was elected by the people. I think what I've been thinking about the last few days is who voted for the new president, and how did it break down in terms of race? Most people of color, and I'm oversimplifying, I know that, but majority of people of color voted for Hillary Clinton. The majority of white Americans voted for Donald Trump. So what is that about? I mean, are we not living in the same place? Are we seeing country differently? And I know we've been talking a lot about sort of the working class and how they're frustrated. And so how that's being defined right now is white working class. Well, there's a whole lot of black working class and brown working class and yellow working class. And maybe they feel more optimistic. But why are we seeing ourselves so differently? I don't know. I think I want to read a lot more about it and hear more about it.
Well, I'd like to hear the president talk about that. Absolutely. I mean, he has a couple of weeks, even a couple of months left in office. There's still time to address some of these
issues. You know
what?
That's a great idea. He should do that.
To help us understand, I think there are a lot of people that just, you know, obviously if they voted for Hillary Clinton, feel as if the rug was pulled out from under them. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the fact that you were up in New York at a book signing. And some folks, you felt like you were doing therapy for the people who were there.
The Upper West Side, and, you know, people were saying they didn't know how to respond to it. They didn't know how to react. They were upset. And I just said, you know, there's in the book, I talk about a five-year-old from Birmingham, Alabama, when she found out that the president could not run again. She just threw herself on the floor and cried and cried and cried and cried. And I told those people, if you feel that strong about it, take a week or two and just throw yourself on the floor and cry. But, you know, I think we all, whoever you are, if you got to pick yourself back up, you know, and get focused.
Let me see what Hitcham from Pennsylvania has to say. Hitcham, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I was asked to do it in two sentences. So the only thing that I can say is that, to me, Obama was one of the best presidents ever to be on office. And I think we're not going to see anything like that for a while. And I think he's been portrayed as being really, really bad after this 2 years of listening to the Republican Party talking about him. But I think he did way much more good than people think about it. You know, like, I think he took the U.S. from 2008 to 2016, from one time that the U.S. was really struggling internationally and nationally. And I feel very, very proud of him, and I think he was one of the greatest presidents ever to roll in office.
Hitcham, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Anything you want to add to that, Michael Days?
I'm interested in your perspective. That, you know, I think if you and this is a push for my book, but if you read it, you'll be surprised at just how much he did get done. Now, a lot of it was he had to do through executive orders, but
which can be undone, and I think will be undone by President Obama.
Some of it will be undone. I don't think all of it can be undone. But, you know, at the end of the book, I felt like here's a guy that's just so resilient. He just never gave up. And you have that kind of DNA. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for the American people.
One of the things he wasn't able to do, and he became the kind of consoler, the comforter-in-chief at Sandy Hook in Charleston, South Carolina, after these gun massacres, calling not just for people to come together, but sort of addressing the source of some of these problems. Why do you think he wasn't able to make more progress in having, I would describe, a sensible gun legislation? And it seemed the country was calling for it.
You know, what can I say about that? I think the people who have guns, who really cherish their guns, do not really want to have a conversation that puts any limits on what they can do with their guns and how many guns they can have. And, you know, I think a lot of us, after there's another massacre, we say, well, this has got to be the one.
Right.
When all those kids were killed in Connecticut, I said, well, this is absolutely going to be the point where we say we got to change these laws, and we never do. So I think that's a frustration for a lot of people.
You mentioned the environment and the Paris Accords, and it'll be interesting. I got a list today. I think it was in the New York Times of the things that Donald Trump said he wanted to get rid of as president, and whether that will happen or not. But it's interesting to look at the fact that CO2 emissions are down, I think in part because we've moved away from coal. Renewable energy is up. Fuel efficiency standards are up. He did, I think, belatedly stop the Keystone XL pipeline. There are other pipeline issues that are still in play. But as you look at all of that, what is your takeaway?
I think it's going to be a mixed bag. The pipeline thing, you could see that being resurrected. But, you know, apparently, the upside of having the emission controls in your car is it's better gas efficiency. Who doesn't want to pay less for gas on any given week? So I think the public, we got to remember that we're the people that actually the government's supposed to work for. And I think after people stop freaking out about what happened, or not freaking about what happened, I think Washington has to hear from all of us.
Let me read an email from Diane. She says, I feel the major failure, certainly not by Obama himself, but of the Obama administration, is a lack of any significant change in gun laws, especially in the wake of the many devastating mass killings, something we were just talking about. And I guess the question is, as a president, you know, you're not the dictator, but you have a lot of power, mm-hmm. whether he used his bully pulpit in effective ways or not, or whether you just have to, you know, make this a signature achievement and just talk about it all the time.
I don't know. Maybe that's one of the things he should have fought for when he was most powerful. It was probably the first 2 years of his administration, and he really went after health care. And the other thing I think his first law was the Lilly Ledbetter law, which required anybody who employs people to pay men and women the same amount. So those were two major things. That's it. But, you know, the gun piece, you just have the sense that it's going to be ongoing.
That's Michael Days. And again, he is the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News, author of a new book called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. And I should add that he's going to be speaking tonight at Barnes & Noble in Center City, Philadelphia at 7 o'clock. But you can talk to him right now by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get George from Lehigh Valley to join us. Hi, George. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? Thanks.
Good.
I think there's a tendency to start looking, especially right now, at Obama with rose-colored glasses. However, I have to say, there's a couple things I have to say. We're rewriting history in many ways already. We're more polarized now than we ever were before he came into office. There are a lot of black candidates I thought should have been president. I would have loved to have as president, but he is not one of them.
I'm curious, George, who would have been a better president from your perspective?
Well, the couple of guys that ran on the Republican ticket that dropped out early,
like Ben Carson.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, Ben Carson. Yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with how weak he got at the tail end, but Ben Carson was one of them. And I can't remember his name now.
Well, that's all right. Well, George, let me take your essential point about feeling as if Barack Obama divided the country. And I'm even seeing divided along racial lines, his comment about Trayvon Martin, something you, Michael Days, write in your book about seeing that as a pivotal point for the president. Michael? Yeah, George, hold on. Go ahead, Michael Days.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those moments when he was just really being authentic and said he could see if he had a son, he's what he said, Trayvon Martin would look just like him, which I thought was a pretty innocent, emotional, authentic moment, but it didn't play well around the country. And George, is that kind of thing? Is that those kinds of things you think brought us more separate, made us more separate?
Oh, sure. And starting with the professor on the porch, I had a friend of mine that was taken into custody, trying to break into his own home. This guy happened to be white. But they didn't know that he was going up his fire escape because he locked himself out until he was proven, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. These were cops protecting his property. And we have people now, you know, you see reports of people that are claiming racism because it's a great way to get out of problems, and a number of them falsely.
Well, and, you know what, George, I don't want to get too off on a tangent here, and one can get anecdotes. I think it should be said that Gates was trying to go in his front door, which I think is different from the fire escape. But I think what George raises, Michael, and perhaps this is some of the unfinished business of this country, is that the divide, the racial mm-hmm. divide that still exists in the U.S.
Well, no doubt, and I think some of it is just we walk in different shoes. Black and white, and black men in particular, brown men in particular, used to being stopped and frisked, sometimes for just walking. So you might understand why so many people have an attitude about it. And I know a lot of Americans say, well, you should just do what the police officer says. But, you know, and we've seen enough video now that some things just get out of control, and there's really no reason why things have gotten out of control. But, you know, we need to be able to talk about it or work through some of these issues and Because it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't seem like it's getting any better.
Mm. George, thanks for the call to Radio Times. An email from Al: the best thing Obama did was stop Americans from torturing. Perhaps the worst thing about his replacement is he thinks that was a mistake and that we should torture people, some of whom inevitably will turn out to be innocent. And this has to do with the war on terror. I mean, even Guantanamo Bay, something President Obama said he wanted to close, but clearly he will not be able to accomplish that. But he did stop the enhanced interrogations. Candidate Trump certainly talked about the fact that he would undo that, although the military has pushed back on that as well. Any thoughts, Mike?
Well, the other thing that, you know, we don't want to forget is that, you know, he was pretty hawkish in dealing with terror. In fact, he took a bold move going after Osama bin Laden. And if that had gone badly, that's all we'd probably still be talking about.
Well, and we have that photograph of those worried faces, right,
looking at the screen
to see what would happen.
Right.
He has been criticized by people on the left for his use of drones, for instance. As you mentioned, some of these foreign policy issues that are, of course, challenging, but at the same time, I think unfinished as well.
And you know, you kind of wonder, will they ever be finished?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did it take Vice President Joe Biden to out President Obama on marriage equality, to out him?
He was getting there. I mean, I think his heart finally got to the right place. But also, I think for a lot of Americans, their attitudes were changing about him. And I think my own theory is that LGBT people stop living secret lives. So then you find out your uncle is gay or your child is gay. And that makes it very personal, doesn't it? So I think as a country, we moved along and the president just got ahead of it a little bit.
I wonder about things like financial reform. I know they're Dodd-Frank. This gets into some of the details. But I guess the question about with a President Trump, whether those key and controversial programs to deal with some of the problems of the financial fallout, whether those will be in place or not. Do you worry about that?
Well, I worry about all of it, but you could see
all of it.
But you could see some of that stuff being dismantled fairly quickly.
Because they can.
And I think the incoming president said that he wants everybody to have a tax break, and that includes the wealthy as well.
What about trade deals? That seems such a central part of this presidential election.
That's what I'm going to wait and see on that one. I don't know how, you know, we're talking about bringing jobs back from overseas. I'm not sure that's possible. I guess if the tariffs are high enough, but the other issue is we like buying our
cheap
nice
product.
Stuff at Target or wherever. Are we going to pay $120 for a shirt?
Or $500 for a TV set?
Or $500 for a TV set when you can get a really nice one now for $250.
Anything surprise you in this book as you went through and put together what you saw as President Obama's accomplishments? You see pattern here at all?
The pattern is he just doesn't give up, you know, even with, you know, this gentleman who's not going to be a Supreme Court justice. You know, the Congress made it quite clear, do not send a name over here. And he said, no, I'm going to send a name over. But just in terms of a particular issue, the clean water, the clean air, the really caring about the environment, really trying to lower the temperature of the planet. I can't say I spent a whole lot of time thinking about that until I researched. And I thought, you know, talk about a legacy. If this happens, you know, you've got 190 countries involved in trying to make it happen. That's great for us and our children, our grandchildren, our great, and whoever's going to be here 100 years from now.
Let me squeeze on another caller. We've got, looks like Christopher from Philadelphia. Christopher, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Marty, you were asking earlier, what's the most important thing Obama did?
Yes.
Well, he gave health insurance to more than 20 million people who didn't have it before. That's pretty darn important.
Well,
plus, he got us out of two wars that we should never have been in the first place.
Well, Christopher, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We're not quite out of either the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War, but certainly a much diminished presence. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, I think you're dead on in terms of the health care piece, which is why I really would argue that it's going to be hard to unbundle that. people, you know, you can imagine one story after another of somebody dying from cancer, and this is the only way they get treatment is through their Affordable Care, and they're not getting any. There would be so many stories, and I'm hearing reports from around the country now. People are starting to panic. The day after the election, 100,000 people signed up for Affordable Care or Obamacare. Right. So what does that tell you?
He often described as no drama Obama.
No drama Obama.
I mean, even yesterday at his press conference, cool as a cucumber. Do you think that was a? Do you think there are times when he needed to have more drama as Obama? Or do you think his, I mean, this is who he is, that his cool demeanor served him and served us?
At one point, I thought I would have liked to see more drama. Right now, I'm feeling like I like to feel confident and comfortable and that somebody's really in charge. I mean, yesterday, the day, was it 2 days after the election that the president-elect, yes. I guess it's the first lady-elect, too, or first, the incoming first lady, they went to the White House, and it takes a really strong, self-centered person to really, self-assured person, I guess the word is, to pull that off and to be thinking what's really important at this point. It's really the professional transfer of power that we've done in this country forever and ever.
And he's made that very clear. He made it clear that day. He made it clear yesterday at his press conference that this is how we do elections in this country, whether we like the results or not.
You know, and we know from him being on the stump for Mrs. Clinton what he really thinks of the incoming president, but he was couldn't have been more gracious.
Well, Michael Days, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me on, Marty. This has been a delight.
Well, thanks so much. And he's the editor of the Philadelphia Daily News, and his book is called Obama's Legacy, What He Accomplished as President. And I should add that he's speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at Barnes & Noble on Rittenhouse Square in Center City, Philadelphia. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to get historian Julian Zelizer in on the conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moskowain, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. What will historians say about the presidency of Barack Obama? He still has a few months left in his administration before Donald Trump gets the keys to the White House. Trump campaigned on a platform of overturning many of Obama's key accomplishments, and now that the Republicans control so many levers of power, Obama's legacy could be on the chopping block. But history can have a way of surprising us. We asked Julian Zelizer to join us. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, also a fellow at New America, author of a number of books, including The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. And Julian Zelizer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Are we witnessing the undoing of the Obama legacy, or is it too soon to tell?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell. I think the threat to the Obama legacy is very real, though, and we shouldn't underestimate it. Trump will not only be president, but he will be president with a Republican Congress, and many of them are intent on dismantling a lot of what President Obama accomplished, including ACA, and they will have a lot of power to do it. So I think it's at risk. I think this presidency ends with some of its signature accomplishments facing the serious possibility of being overturned.
Have other recent presidents been in that situation, especially when going from one party to another?
Well, sure. You can think of this with President Bush. His policies were George W. Bush were very controversial, both the wars, a lot of the national security programs that he put into place after 9/11, and even some of his domestic programs like No Child Left Behind. And there was a risk there, especially with the victory of President Obama, who essentially ran as the antithesis of Bush and promised to overturn a lot of this. But in that case, a lot of the program survived. So that's where we have to distinguish between at risk and what will actually play out once the politics begins.
You're a historian, as I say, Julian. I'm curious, though, and this is looking at Donald Trump, even before he ran for the White House, really was the key birther in this country and was very public about it, saying essentially that We had an illegitimate president. He's now, of course, going to be the president of the United States. And he has brought into his administration a guy, Steve Bannon, with ties to white nationalists. Are you worried about this?
Yes, it's very disturbing. One element of Donald Trump's campaign had been to play to all sorts of hatreds and fears that exist in the electorate. And it's not really a debate whether that happened. It's pretty undeniable. And that's different than explaining why voters liked him. We saw attacks on immigrants using all kinds of nativist arguments about the threat that they posed. We saw Islamophobia when he proposed a ban on all Muslims. And we've seen a lot of anti-Semitism emerge in his campaign, including the final ad that he broadcast, which played to classic anti-Semitic themes. And so the question after he becomes president is, does he move away from that? And by appointing Steve Bannon, whose website, Breitbart, played into a lot of this and who personally has a record of making anti-Semitic remarks, it's very troubling to see this. I think many observers say this is not normal, and it sends a troubling signal about where this is going.
Is it not normal, though, from your perspective?
No, this isn't normal. This is not the kind of appointee we would expect in 2016. That's how this campaign is already a repudiation of some of what we saw with President Obama. His victory in 2008 and re-election signaled that America was moving in a different direction, even with the problems we faced in terms of diversity and pluralism and tolerance. And so this campaign, in that respect, is a pushback against that. And the appointment of someone like Bannon is not what we'd expect to see for a top-level White House person.
Is the mantra of change, is that something that American voters have American voters find compelling?
They do. This is always compelling, obviously, especially after a two-term presidency. There's a lot of sentiment, even if the president's popular, for moving in a new direction. But there's also real problems, and it's a mistake to ignore them, certainly for Democrats. There are real problems in the economy that emerged and were front and center in this campaign, where many Americans feel that it's talking about economic growth or low unemployment doesn't actually address the insecurity that many middle-class Americans face. And there's real problems in our political process as a result of money in politics and lobbying and gridlock that allows arguments about change to be very appealing. So it's a classic theme, it's a standard theme, but we also have to look at some of the reasons for this underlying discontent in a lot of the electorate.
I mean, you see the Democrats beginning to confer about what they did wrong and how to not just rebuild the party, but perhaps even rebrand the party.
Yeah, and I think that's the most useful discussion that Democrats could certainly have. I think some of the discussions about how the campaign was undermined are less useful at this point. But certainly, this was a discussion we had before Trump won. We heard Democrats talking in the primary when they saw the appeal of Bernie Sanders on these economic questions, trying to say, what hasn't been accomplished under President Obama? Where is the economy really struggling? And why did he find such appeal, Bernie Sanders, in addressing these issues directly? And I think now they're looking back, and there's going to be a more serious discussion about how the party's addressed all of this. And they need to do that, and they need to do it quickly.
Do you think Bernie Sanders could have beaten Donald Trump?
It's speculation, and it's very different to have him run in a primary than to see how this would have unfolded against Donald Trump in a general election campaign. We don't know, but I do think he was tapping into something much more serious than many Democrats were willing to admit in terms of divisions and problems in the party and concerns in the electorate. It wasn't simply a kind of simplistic, quixotic campaign. I think he was actually tapping into some of the sentiment that drove Democrats or undecideds in states like Michigan to vote for Donald Trump instead of Hillary Clinton.
Is it too soon, Julian, to think of Obama and his legacy or what you think will endure or even how we will look back on the Obama years?
No, I think we can do that already. I actually held a conference the week after the convention right here at Princeton where I had a group of historians start to talk about this. And we already can see at least some of the outlines of what happened. And obviously discussing a program like ACA, even if we don't know where health care is going and will it survive, it's important now to start to recognize and discuss what accomplishments and what limitations happened since that program was put into effect. So we could start to see the legacy. The most obvious legacy still, even if this election in some ways feels like a move in a different direction, was the election of an African-American president in 2008. And that's not going to go away, and that's something historians will be talking about and students will be talking about for a long time.
And that's Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. We are talking about the transfer of power that we are witnessing from President Obama to President-elect Donald Trump, and also talking about what will or might endure from the Obama years. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Julian, let me read a comment from Sissy. What does history say about George Bush now? I feel like it's way too soon to tell what history will say about Obama. I personally think he's great. And it is interesting, and I don't know whether just everything is relative, but I've heard people that were probably critics of George W. Bush thinking, well, maybe he wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, I think the one thing we can't really do is say, will people look back and love him or hate him? And that's a question people often ask, and I never really answer, only that the answer is it's going to change. It's going to depend on who you are. It will never be something stable. There's many presidents who end unpopular. Harry Truman was not liked by the American public and now considered one of the great presidents. George W. Bush is still not very popular, but he's certainly undergone rehabilitation in part because of the direction in which his party moved. I'm more interested in the historical context of what happened under President Obama. So, you know, really to understand in terms of his foreign policy, how does that fit in the 20 or 30 years that came before how we address these issues? Or how does the ACA and his decisions about how to structure that health care program compare to, and relate to what President Clinton tried to do in the early 1990s? But in terms of evaluating how we're going to think of him, it changes. And we learn more about presidents. And as our times change, we look back and think differently about presidents. That's what I think is happening a little bit with George W. Bush.
And don't you think Lyndon Johnson, whom you wrote a book about?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's the prime example of that, isn't he?
Yeah, for many decades, he was absolutely detested. Many Democrats wanted to have nothing to do with Lyndon Johnson. He was the president who brought us the Vietnam War. He was the president who allowed Richard Nixon to win in 1968. But in the last 8 years, we've heard a lot more about how he was this great political operator and how he understood how to make things work in Washington in ways that we need to have again in our current system. And he's been rehabilitated, and we look at his civil rights accomplishments now, and even if they might have been limited, they were pretty significant and awesome in the minds of many Americans. So he's yet another example of this changing reputation.
Let me read an email from Ron, who says that Barack Obama was a magnificent president and a great communicator. However, he did not hold enough press conferences to tell the American people what he was doing and what he wanted to do. And I wonder, Julian, whether there's some truth to that, that he didn't use his bully pulpit in a way that could have been more effective communicating his ideas?
Well, I think there was a problem in communication. I don't know if it's a bully pulpit problem or how the administration ultimately undersold some of their accomplishments. And it's a critique we've heard that the president actually did a lot. A lot happened in the last eight years in terms of public policy, both here and overseas. And yet politically, there didn't seem to be the kind of payback that you would expect. And one example of this was the economic stimulus early in his administration. It was very successful in stabilizing the economy and getting things moving again. Yet many Americans don't even know what was in it.
Yeah.
They don't know much about what was in it. And there's been a critique. Why didn't the administration, why didn't the president himself do more to say, this is what we're doing, this is a road we built? to brand it. And I think this is a critique that will continue to be made about what happened during the last 8 years.
Let me get Jim from Reading to join our conversation. Jim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have you, Jim? Nope, we lost Jim. Let me read another comment here. This is an email from Karen. She says, conservatives blame Obama for America being more polarized because he dared ever even acknowledging that America still faces difficulty of race issues. Many African-Americans say he did not do enough for them. And it's interesting, this whole issue of race, as I don't need to say, Julian, I'm obviously our first black president. Was he able to make accomplishments in this really tough area?
Well, he did make accomplishments through programs that benefited African Americans. So it's a mistake to think that the Affordable Care Act and the enrollment of millions of Americans who did not have insurance, including African Americans, is not beneficial in that respect. And he addressed, at least through the bully pulpit, issues of race in ways that we haven't heard from any president, certainly. But there were many, many areas, as we see in the debates over policing, where the administration was not able to do much, and some will argue wasn't willing to do as much as it could. Institutional racism remains the problem of the day, and we don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. But I think the president himself, I'm sure, would feel that this was one of the great limitations, if not failures, of his time.
We can't take this call because we don't have enough time, but I'll read. This is from Iban, who says, why Obama was weak on racial issues? Well, he didn't go to Ferguson. He didn't go to Baltimore. I think picking up on what you were just saying there, Julian, in terms of sort of picking and choosing the issues that he wanted to really focus on.
Yeah, and there's some analysis that suggests at least early in his presidency he was hesitant because of who he was and felt that politically this would damage him on everything else if he was too aggressive. But we also need to remember he spoke a lot about race. There were many great speeches about race, and there were efforts by the Justice Department, for example, to push back on all the voting rights limitations that we've seen gone into effect and to deal with policing. So we need to know more, but I think there's enough there to say it wasn't that he ignored this. And this was a president, obviously, who cared about race and has tried to address it. Whether he did enough, that will be something I think we'll be discussing for a while.
Julian, we won't have time to really talk about this, but the whole issue of the Electoral College is now back on the table because Hillary Clinton had more votes from the people than from the Electoral College.
Yeah, but the chances of reform are slim. We've gone through periods like this, like after 2000, and the impetus for reform quickly dies away. And I think that's going to happen again. And we have to remember that was the rules of the election. That's how both candidates campaigned. And if we want to try to have a constitutional amendment, I think it's going to be a big, big push for supporters of that because history suggests we end up agreeing or accepting the status quo.
Well, to be continued, Julian Zelizer, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University and a fellow at New America. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us.